Good evening. President Trump says it was all a mistake when Iran shot down a United States drone. A flag burner speaks out, a Jewish perspective on concentration camps at the border, and Trump on nuclear waste. It's a disaster. With these and other stories, I'm Paul DiRienzo with the news for Thursday, June 20th, 2019. President Donald Trump downplayed the dramatic escalation in tensions with Iran Thursday after the downing of a U.S. drone near the Persian Gulf sparked fears that tensions with Tehran could spill over into a confrontation. Calling the shoot down a new wrinkle, a new fly in the ointment, Trump told reporters in the Oval Office he finds it hard to believe it was intentional.
I think probably Iran made a mistake. I would imagine it was a general or somebody that made a mistake in shooting that drone down. And fortunately, that drone was unarmed. It was not, there was no man in it, and there was no, it was over international waters, clearly over international waters, but we didn't have a man or woman in the drone. We had nobody in the drone. It would have made a big difference, let me tell you. Would have made a big, big difference. But I have a feeling, I may be wrong, and I may be right, but I'm right a lot. I have a feeling that it was a mistake made by somebody that shouldn't have been doing what they did.
Who do you think did
that? I think they made a mistake. And I'm not just talking to the country made a mistake. I think that somebody under the command of that country made a big mistake.
And you're talking to Iran's leadership.
Let's just see what happens. Let's see what happens. It's all going to work out.
So you feel like there are members of your administration who want to?
Say it.
Are you saying you think it wasn't intentional to strike the drone?
I don't know. I find it hard to believe it was intentional, if you want to know the truth. I think that it could have been somebody who was loose and stupid that did it. But we'll be able to report back and you'll understand exactly what happened. But it was a very foolish move. That I can tell you.
Do you feel like there are members of your administration who are trying to push you into conflict?
No, not at all. Not at all. In fact, in many cases, it's the opposite. But I will say, look, I said I want to get out of these endless wars. I campaigned on that. I want to get out. We've been in Afghanistan for 19 years. As you know, we've reduced very substantially in Afghanistan. We beat the caliphate. We took back 100% of the caliphate. When it was 99%, Justin, I said, we're going to get out. We're going to start peeling back. And everybody went crazy because it was 99. So I said, all right, so we'll finish it up. So we got 100%. And we're pulling that back out of Syria. We're pulling a lot of people back. But this is something, this is a new wrinkle. This is a new fly in the ointment, what happened shooting down the drone. And this country will not stand for it. That I can tell you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, President.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And Trump's comments and earlier tweet with the same message came after Iran's Revolutionary Guard said it had shot down an intruding American spy drone after it entered into the country's territory Thursday. Trump told reporters later Thursday morning that the drone had been over international waters. Asked if the U.S. would respond or go to war, Trump said, you'll find out. Trump's ambiguous tweet that Iran had made a mistake held the strong possibility of a miscalculation. It might have signaled to Iran a threat that the country had made a mistake in defying Trump. Apparently, the president was saying Iran had made a mistake in launching the missile that took down the drone. In that sense, it was Trump's tweet that was the mistake. Meanwhile, the city of Cleveland agreed to pay $225,000 to a protester arrested during a flag burning at the 2016 Republican convention. The agreed-upon payment will settle a lawsuit. Gregory Joey Johnson said that officers had violated his free speech rights when they stepped in after Johnson lit a flag on fire surrounded by a throng of people. Police arrested more than a dozen people at the time and charged Johnson, a San Francisco resident, with first-degree misdemeanor assault. An officer doused the blaze with a small fire extinguisher. Johnson tells WBAI that the settlement was meant as a reminder that flag burning has been protected speech in the United States since 1989.
I got this settlement through a lot of struggle, really, man. What happened was I was arrested in 2016 along with 15 other people. We called ourselves the RNC 16 because we burned the American flag outside the Republican National Convention as Trump was being nominated. And I think you know Trump was spewing out all of this America First chauvinism and ugly xenophobia and jingoism, and the situation cried out to have people come there and stand with the people of the world and against all of that. I burn the flag because I can't turn away from the fact and close my eyes to the fact that it's the flag that flies over concentration camps on the border where thousands of immigrants are detained and where children cry and even die now. It's the same bloody rag that blesses the bombs and the planes and the troops that have murdered and mangled hundreds and thousands of children in Iraq and Afghanistan and Pakistan and Yemen and Somalia, a whole arc of countries across the Middle East in the last two decades.
Gregory Joey Johnson. At the time, police said they intervened because Johnson lit himself on fire. Johnson and his attorneys, however, claimed that statement was false and posted video footage that contradicted the city's statement. Instead, they said officers stepped in to snuff out the protesters' First Amendment rights.
We burned a flag right at the entrance to the Republican National Convention in Cleveland. We were in what they called the designated protest area. That wasn't the issue. The issue was that regardless of the ruling in my Supreme Court case that said we had the right to do what we did, the police still crashed the, we had set up a safety circle to do the flag burning in a safe way. They crashed that circle with fire extinguishers and chokeholds, and they arrested myself and 15 other people, and we fought charges for more than a year and a half before charges were dropped against all of the defendants.
Or was it a total surprise?
It wasn't a total surprise in the sense that Cleveland had been turned into an armed camp. I mean, they spent $50 million to secure Cleveland. They designated it a national security event. A lot of people stayed away in droves, which was really unfortunate. People needed to be there and to stand against this and to stand with the people of the world and not be intimidated by this imperialist chauvinism.
Just want to be sort of a devil's advocate here, is that this distracts from the issues that people want to discuss, because when the people, sometimes even people who might be on our side or at least neutral, see a flag burning and they think of, they don't think of the horrors of the American flag, but they think of what patriotism is supposed to mean, that there is a good side to America.
All this sentimentalism that just floats a mythology, a mythological America that is a force for good in the world. No, man, it's a force for plunder, for exploitation, and that flag is the brand symbol, is the logo for that global exploitation and oppression that's backed up with a giant military armada that, by the way, is the number one institutional consumer of petroleum anywhere in the world. The number one consumer, the number one contributor to global warming. So people got to look at reality. This is a whole fascist package that's being pushed on people. And people either have to stand up against it or else not wonder why. How did fascism happen in Nazi Germany? And it got consolidated and the people didn't rise up to stop it. Look around you. It's really urgent that millions of people get into the streets to drive out this fascist regime of Trump and Pence.
Why mess up things just because a bad guy's in when you might win the next election?
I hear what you're saying, but you know what? The Revolution Club, we have this expression that goes, you think you're woke, but you're sleepwalking through a nightmare. And this is the reason we actually have a tour going on right now. It's time to get organized for an actual revolution, to snap people out of this sleepwalking, to challenge people to confront reality and the stakes for humanity, and to stop leaving it up to the Democrats. We say the Republican Party is fascist and the Democrats are also a party of war crimes and crimes against humanity. And people have to break out of the whole framework and see that it's on us, it's on in our millions, you know, to drive this regime from power, and then go for an actual revolution to get to the root of the problem.
And that was Joey Johnson, who was also arrested at the Republican National Convention in Dallas in 1984 for burning a flag. This reporter was there at the time, standing right next to him as that flag burned. The U.S. Supreme Court ruled for Johnson in 1989 and said flag burning constituted free speech. At the time, in 1984, Dallas police were led on a merry chase during a so-called war chest tour through the streets as Reagan prepared to accept the GOP nomination. Johnson was arrested, convicted, and sentenced to 2 years. In 1989, a suit filed by Johnson with attorney William Kunstler was heard by the Supreme Court, which ruled that flag burning was in fact free speech. And Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez accused President Donald Trump's administration of running concentration camps in its detention of migrants at the southern border. Conservatives quickly slammed the New York Democrat for her use of the term, which is most commonly associated with Nazi death camps during the Holocaust. She said, "The United States is running concentration camps on our southern border, and that is exactly what they are. They are concentration camps," she told an Instagram Live audience on Monday evening. She went on to say, "And if that doesn't bother you, I want to talk to the people that are concerned enough with humanity to say that we should not. That never again means something," a reference to a phrase commonly invoked by Jews about the Holocaust. She added, "The fact that concentration camps are now an institutionalized practice in the home of the free is extraordinarily disturbing, and we need to do something about it." Rabbi Michael Lerner is founder of Tikkun magazine. He says, "While the camps on the border are not death camps, concentration camp is an appropriate term."
Well, the congresswoman was technically absolutely right. Any large group of people being held in a prison-like facility without trial, without charges against them, and kept there with indefinite amount of time is a concentration camp. And that's how we apply that to what happened to Japanese in the Second World War and what's happening today in China against a huge number of Muslims. It's not a term that Jews have owned as our own personal property and hence have the right to say to others who can use it and under what circumstances. On the other hand, it may not be wise to use that term very freely because of the association with death camps, which the concentration camps in Nazi Germany were, in fact, both concentration camps and death camps. It may not be wise to stir that up, but having stirred it up, we certainly ought to stand up for the congresswoman and say she had absolutely every right to use that term. I don't think we have any likelihood of mass murder of the people who are seeking asylum on our border, at least not in the foreseeable future. I don't see that happening. If it does happen, there are going to be a lot of us in trouble. a lot of you and me and others are going to be in such camps. And if the government ever gets to the point where it wants to round up people who are dissidents.
In World War II, the United States did hold Japanese people in internment camps, which is a funny word for a concentration camp. And also, there's been a lot.
We have interns at we have interns at Tikkun magazine. So,
right. Yeah,
it's a funny way. It's a funny way of describing the, holding people against their will, and without trial and without any possibility of due process to get out of that until the government decides that they should be released.
Mm-hmm. And in general, there's been a lot of reference. Different groups have been saying that Donald Trump is a fascist. They don't say he's a Nazi, although that sometimes gets used and thrown around. But generally, I think the fact that he's a fascist in line with, let's say, Mussolini and another strongman-type governments. What do you think about that?
I don't think he has taken the kinds of steps that would be appropriately called fascistic, except on the border. But if we had a fascist regime here, WBAI and Tikkun magazine would be immediately shut down and its editors and prominent authors would be arrested and held in concentration camps. We still have free speech, and we don't have any attempt to make it impossible for dissenters to put out their free speech. Now, that doesn't mean that I approve of anything else that this guy does, or doubt that he might have those fascist intentions, but he hasn't acted on them except in a few instances. Now, the few instances on the border are outrageous, murderous, deserving of deserving of him personally and many people in his administration to be tried and sent to prison for what they've already done. But the very fact that I can talk that way about the possibility of trials and sending people like him to prison is a testimony to the fact that America is not yet a fascist society. I think he has fascist aspirations, but more as a psychopath.
Can it happen here? Do you feel it could under some circumstances? I mean, we've seen these horrific shootings in synagogues and churches. We've seen the marches and the Jews and others will not replace us chants, the tiki torch marches and the rise of white supremacy re-emerging. Can it happen here?
Yes, absolutely. It certainly could happen here. And there's every reason for us to be vigilant in opposing what he's done. But the way it can happen here is, I think, not immediate. It's a way of step by step. The Germans did not, German Nazis did not immediately throw into concentration camps all the Jews that they could round up, etc. It was, first we're going only for the communists, then we're going for these provocative Jews, then we're going for gays, then we're going for people who are have disabilities. It was a step-by-step process, and that step-by-step process, I think, is the first step for that is the way that we have been treating people on the border. And so I worry about that very much and do think that anything we can do to stop that. But I also think that the way we've treated people on the border is only an escalation from some horrible policies that were instituted by the Obama administration, and that the way that I could imagine that this happening is by us electing another Obama-type official politician and having them raise hopes for a fundamental change, and then have those hopes once again dashed as they were in the 8 years of the Obama administration. At that point, I think we might face an election with, let's say, in four to 8 years after the 2020 election, in which there was a real fascist candidate, somebody who explicitly wanted to round up and put in prison dissenters in this country.
Rabbi Michael Lerner is founder of Tikkun Magazine. And you're listening to the news on WBAI New York. I'm Paul DiRienzo. Alabama Republican Roy Moore has announced he's running for U.S. Senate again in 2020 after failing to win the seat 2 years ago amid sexual misconduct accusations. Moore announced his campaign Thursday, seeking an eventual rematch against Democrat Senator Doug Jones. The announcement upends an election viewed by Republicans as a top priority in 2020 and ignores President Donald Trump's warning that he cannot win. Moore joins a crowded GOP primary field vying to challenge Jones. In 2017, Moore narrowly lost the special election to fill the seat that belonged to Jeff Sessions. He faced allegations of sexual misconduct with teenagers decades ago. The former Alabama Chief Justice has a following among evangelical voters after defying federal court orders regarding same-sex marriage and the public display of the Ten Commandments. And in Washington State, the Department of Energy is changing the way it classifies radioactive waste at Hanford. Hanford is the site of the reactors that produce plutonium used in the first atomic bomb. The bomb dropped on Nagasaki, Japan on August 9th, 1945, and used in thousands of bombs produced in the Cold War until 1989. The Department of Energy announced Wednesday the change in how it will be interpreting the legal definition of high-level radioactive waste at Hanford and its system sister sites in the Savannah River, South Carolina, and in Idaho. Each has high-level waste stored in underground tanks. The government says all options will be considered. Opposition by the state of Washington says they will consider all options to stop what Governor Jay Inslee said is a reckless and dangerous action that would open the door for the federal government to walk away from its obligation to clean up millions of gallons of radioactive and hazardous chemical wastes. Tom Carpenter is director of Hanford Challenge, a watchdog organization based in Richland, Washington. He says that something must be done to stop this plan by the Trump administration, which endangers thousands of people in the Hanford and Richland area and along the Columbia River.
Now there's this move afoot by the Department of Energy, which has been on the receiving end of its criticism under the Trump administration in particular, to abolish the board or at least weaken it to the point of uselessness. And they're pretty close to doing that. And there's a lot of pushback happening right now with some legislation being introduced by Congressman Udall in the Senate, and I think Heinrich, to push back against that. But it's very alarming to those of us who spend our time watching these nuclear facilities and the safety issues, talking to whistleblowers, that this very important board would, be destroyed either through inaction or through defunding or through abolishment.
What would be the effect? What's the real danger? What's at stake?
Well, what's at stake is some of the largest inventories, for instance, at the Hanford, in the nation, or at the Hanford nuclear site. Then they're stored in leaking tanks. They're stored in buildings underground. And a release of these materials into the air, water, soil, et cetera, would constitute a catastrophe if you had sufficient quantities in the right conditions. And we know what that looks like because we have the example of Chernobyl and Fukushima. It wouldn't maybe come about exactly the same way with a reactor accident, but it wouldn't have to be. You've got reactor fuel, essentially, that if it exploded or caught on fire, the Defense Board, for instance, has come in and estimated that the doses to the public would be just phenomenal, like, prompt fatal doses, basically, at Hanford, for instance, in Los Alamos, and more recently at Pantex, where the government, has a facility that both assembles and disassembled nuclear warheads. So you would think explosive safety would be number one there, but no, it's not. It's, there's cutbacks and shortcuts being made, and it's the Defense Board is kind of like this thin line between making sure safety happens in places like that or if it doesn't. So if you remove that oversight, then you're just begging for an accident because the Department of Energy is incapable of regulating itself.
How is the Trump administration treating Hanford in general, and where is this heading?
Well, they're trying to shortcut the cleanup at the Hanford site by relabeling nuclear waste. It's an old game. If you call it something else, then you don't have to use the same rules. So instead of saying that, for instance, a high-level waste in the nuclear waste tanks needs to be removed and treated and disposed of in a manner that protects future generations by putting it into a deep geological repository, the Trump administration has just given itself the authority to relabel this stuff based on their own say-so, basically. And we think that is a violation of the Nuclear Waste Policy Act, which is a law passed by Congress back in 1982. But the DOE has forged ahead despite our objections. And, of course, if the DOE gets its way, they won't be cleaning up the nuclear waste at the Hanford site or any other site. They'll just leave it parked in these tanks or in shallow land burial, leaving it to contaminate river systems, you know, subject to explosions and fires or acts of terror. So it's they're just doing it to get out of the cost and trouble of having to clean it all up. So they're talking about 10-year plans for cleanup. Hanford's going to take at least a good 90 years and cost hundreds of billions of dollars to clean up. Of course, they would like to use that money to for other things besides that.
They're embarking on a new nuclear modernization program, so there might be actually more production of more plutonium in the future.
Isn't that amazing? It's like we have so much plutonium, we don't know what to do with it. It's actually a cleanup headache. We're trying to denuclearize, or at least have been, to prevent a nuclear war. And the kind of weapons that the Trump administration wants to build, they're calling them, you know, essentially easy to use nukes. And, you know, they're lower level kind of tactical nukes that, you know, could be deployed on the battlefield. And the problem with that is, you know, if you throw a nuke into the situation, there's nothing to stop the other side from, you know, escalating. And it doesn't matter if what you used was a 5-kiloton bomb and they used a 50-kiloton bomb and then we use 100 and then it just escalates. So nuclear warfare ought to be outlawed altogether, not made easier. But that's the direction we're moving.
Tom Carpenter is director of Hanford Challenge, a watchdog organization based in Richland, Washington.
I am a hurricane. Listen to yourself. Turn world serves its own needs. Dummy, serve your own needs. Feed it up a knock. Speak grunt. No strength. The ladder starts to clatter with fear. Fight down. High wire and a fire. Representing 7 games in a government for hire and a combat site. Left to us are coming in a hurry with the furies breathing down your neck. Team, my team, reporters, battle Trump. Tethered crop. Look at that. No plane. Find them. Uh-oh. Overflow. Population common food. But it'll do. Save yourself. Serve yourself. World serves its own needs. Listen to your heart.
And that's some of the news for Thursday, June 20th, 2019. The news was produced with Linda Perry. Our engineer is James Irsay. For the WBAI Evening News, I'm Paul DiRienzo.
6 o'clock TV hour, Nokia, cotton, foreign tower, slice and burn, return. Listen to yourself, turn.